copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My name is Anne Solfrid, and this is the theme for this session. Tweens, TV shows, and the gospel. Is there a connection? What does these TV shows that tweens are watching, does they tell young people about what's important, about where you can find hope, what is of real value? Barna Group, they just made some statistics for their for 2017, where they are telling us that a significant majority of children watch television or movies after school, regardless of their age group. And 6 to 11 year olds, they watch cartoons for 28 hours weekly. It's almost a full week of work in front of the TV. And Walt Mueller is saying that there is a cultural narrative that is catechizing our kids. The classical definition of catechesis is to instruct orally. Traditionally, catechesis in the Christian faith took place in the home and the church, with adults asking students a series of questions about faith, to which they would memorize and recite answers. Regularity and repetition were employed to make the instruction effective. Today, they are being catechized through regularity and repetition into a series of cultural beliefs that results in behaviors now and for the rest of their lives. What do they learn from these shows? First of all, just a tiny bit about the concept of tweens. What is a tween? You may know that the concept. It was originally made in the 1920s. So it's a really old concept, but it wasn't until the 80s, 90s that marketers picked it up. They found a new market of consumers that they could direct. And tweens, they are now become a really important market because they are spending so much money and so much time. Generally, it's defined as kids between 8 to 12 or 8 to 14 year olds. And being a tween is thought of as being in a place of limbo between a childhood and adolescence, between family and peers, between standing out and belonging. Who am I? It's a period of transition. In current research on tweens, this ambiguity is the trademark of tweens, moving between irresponsible and responsible, between dependent and autonomous. I just want to say that it's the title or the name tween, it may suggest that they are just waiting for something. They are finished and now there's nothing and then there's something coming. Between means in the middle of. They are in the middle of something and it's an important phase of their life. Tweens are developing. They are changing mentally and physically and emotionally, socially, spiritually. We know that statistics shows that many tweens decide on their faith for the rest of their life. Before they are 13, They make these important decisions and they last the rest of their lives. It's so much harder to turn them over, to show them otherwise when they are 18, when they are 25, because they have already decided. They are transitioning because the nuclear family or family in general have less influence on them. They experience their new freedom. They are media saturated. We have already mentioned that. And they reflect on big questions. They are starting to see that the world is more than just me, my family, my friends. There are things outside. How is this affecting me? They are drawn to the spiritual. But they may not be religious. They may define it as, I believe that there is something out there, more than we can see. Andy Crouch at the Barna Group says that when previous generations confronted the perplexing challenges of parenting and family life, they could fall back on wisdom or old wives' tales that had been handed down for generations. But the pace of technological change has surpassed anyone's capacity to develop enough wisdom to handle it. Where can we go to find out what to tell our kids, how to respond to this transition? What do most of them have in common? We have already said it. Many, many, many hours in front of the screens. If we get to know the media, we get to know them. This is a quote again from Walt Mueller. Daniel White Hodge is the director of the Center for Youth Ministry Studies in Chicago. And he said that youth workers, I will add parents, pastors, everybody working, interacting with tweens, they need critical skills to interpret what messages are and how they are developed within media. It means doing the difficult work of finding God within the sacred, the profane, and the secular, and in turn developing a missional method, model of engagement, having the gospel at center for young people immersed in media. And this is what we are trying to do today. Because these stories that they meet, they are not neutral. They are telling them something about life. If you study TV shows for small children, even they are saying something important about human value, about where they are coming from. But they might say something about the importance of diversity and to be true to yourself. But there are not many of the shows for the smallest ones that are pointing towards something outside of what you can see, what you can touch. But suddenly, when you come to series for tweens, something changes. When they are 7, 8, 9 years old, the shows are more and more picking up on their interest in the spiritual, in magic, in life after death, in ghosts, in dragons, in thoughts of what is reality, what is human life, what is worth risking your life for. And if creators of TV shows are seeing that this is catchy for kids, for tweens, what can we learn from these? And what are the answers they provide? I'll just introduce one concept before we are diving into these TV shows. Because Disney targeted tweens as a consumer group very early on. They noticed that tweens often watch shows that are that were made for older age groups because they were interested in what is going on, what is going to, what is expecting me, what is going to meet me, how am I going to survive being older. And this is why this Norwegian professor says this is about anticipatory socialization. It's about learning the kids what they are going to, what they have to expect. They are, and this is about the way a group of people is preparing for a change of identity and age. And the sources of this information can be parents, it can be adults, other role models. But she says that it's most of all in the media. It plays a big role in facilitating this anticipation. What is life going to be like? We are going to just take a quick look and present these TV shows. Three of them are quite similar in the way that they are made and the way that they are built. One is sticking out, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but I'm going to introduce it. This is Trollhunters. Netflix is not sharing their statistics, so we cannot measure if it's popular on viewer ratings. But we know that Trollhunters have won more prizes than any other TV show for kids in 2017. They were nominated for even more. And we know that it's created and written by Guillermo del Toro, the Mexican producer and writer, and he's doing everything. Who grew up in a Catholic home, but he has stepped away from his faith. But he says that he uses this Christian way of seeing the world when he creates his stories, because religion, he says, is giving us the binary way of thinking that we need to sort how the world is working in darkness and light, and evil and good, and daytime and nighttime. And he says he uses the kind of way this, the religious stories are built to introduce characters that are not human as metaphors for something else. In Trollhunters, there are a lot of characters that are not humans, and they are indeed metaphors for something else. Guillermo del Toro is maybe mostly known for some of you from The Shape of Water, which won Oscars in 2017. This is Jim Lake. He is voiced by the late Anton Yelchin. He died tragically. Some of the other characters has very well-known voices from well-known actors, such as Kelsey Grammer from Frasier. It's a TV show that is what we say is a quality show. Not that everything is we can agree with everything that it's telling us, but it's, the animation is fantastic. If you see Jim Harry is always glowing. He's glowing green. No matter if he's in the dark or if the sun hits him, he's always glowing green. So it seems like to pop out of the screen. And the way the camera glides, it's amazing how he's made an effort to make quality TV show for tweens. Jim Lake is regular. That's the best way of describing him. He's so regular. Regular greats. Regular clothes. He's very skinny. He's not standing out in any way. He lives alone. He lives with his mother. His father ran away when he was a baby. His mother works at a hospital, and she works a lot. So much so that his best friend says, "You mother your mother a lot." Because he has to take care of her. She cannot cook. She cannot clean. He has to do it. And when he cooks, he gets really crafty with the knives. And that comes in handy. Because one day he discovers a pile of stones, which turns out to be the remains of a troll, a dead troll. And this troll was a troll hunter. The troll hunter that protected the trolls from the evil Gum-Gums. And it turns out, not just the trolls, it protected the humans as well. And when Jim stops to examine this pile, he finds an amulet. And suddenly this amulet chooses Jim to be the next troll hunter. And he's the first human troll hunter. Because it turns out that there are life in the sewers and in the mountains and in the dark spaces of this small town of Arcadia. A life that no man has known before. They might have noticed something, but they didn't know what it was. And this amulet that he receives, it gives him supernatural powers and a magical suit. And he has support from his loyal friends. He has some friends in the real world that knows Jim's double life. A couple of trolls takes on training him. They have no choice, because without a troll hunter, it's over. So they have to trust a 15-year-old skinny boy with their lives. He's not prepared at all. Can he do it? And it is of utmost importance that Jim and his friends does not reveal the secret of the troll world to other humans. That means that Jim is drawn between his calling to save the trolls and save the world and loyalty towards his mother. He has to lie to his mother. And that's hard because he loves her. He has to balance being a hero and a normal high school student. And the series was nominated for 9 Daytime Emmy Awards last year. The Worst Witch is based on the books, a series of books by Jill Murphy. The first one was published in 1974. And it tells the story of a witch in training, Mildred Hubble. Again, a regular girl living alone with her mother. Not standing out in any ways. But one summer's day again, her life turns upside down. She discovers she is a witch. And she joins Miss Cackle's Academy for Witches, which is in a castle surrounded by woods. Does it sound familiar? Unfortunately, she has a tendency to be very clumsy, so she ruins everything, her training, and she creates disasters everywhere she goes. And that annoys her teacher, Miss Hardbroom. And that, of course, it always ends well, but it leads to her doubting herself, her own ability, and even her own identity as a witch. But she frequently surprises herself with great achievements. As you can see, this is not an animation. These are live actors. And this collaboration between CBBC and Netflix and German ZDF is one of the most expensive productions they have made for kids. There is one scene where her hair grows uncontrollably, and they have actually sewn together 800 wigs to make it seem like her hair is growing. And the special effects are designed by the Doctor Who team. It's impressive. And with a school in a castle, it seems like Hogwarts. And some people said it was a rip-off of Harry Potter, but this was written 20 years before. So it might be. but it's a lighter version of Harry Potter. It's there's not much other interaction between girls and boys, and it's not so scary. It's not much of them. You can see the dark forces, but not as in Harry Potter. This is Dragons Race to the Edge. How to Train Your Dragon is a movie that came in 2010. And they transformed it into a TV show after the movie. So now there's 6 seasons, and they are all placed between How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2, which came in 2014. So they have tried to get all of the action when he's growing from the experiences in the first movie until the second one. The first one, the two first aired on Cartoon, then it was moved to Netflix, and this last season came February this year. It's American, and in the first movie we meet a mythical Viking world, where this Viking teenager, Hiccup, aspires to follow his tribe's tradition of becoming a dragon slayer. You have to kill a dragon to be accepted as an adult. When he finds this first dragon, finally, he doesn't want to kill it. And he sacrifices his chance of gaining the tribe's acceptance and befriends the dragon instead. And this TV show, it follows this movie because they are starting an academy, for a dragon training academy. Since now dragons and humans are friends, you have to learn how to control them and find out what their powers are and how you can use them. And they are the Hiccup and Toothless, his dragon, and the others are put to the test when they discover new worlds that is harsher than the ones they knew, and new enemies which are looking for every reason to destroy the harmony between Vikings and dragons, and they are not able to be controlled. These are the 3 TV shows we are going to look at. I have worked quite a bit with this one. It's mentioned in the outline, but it differs in so many ways. This is Winx. It's popular. It's been 9 seasons. But it's, you can see that the animation is of a different kind. Some of the features are the same. This young girl suddenly discovers that she's a fairy she didn't know. She travels to another world to go to school and to learn how to use her supernatural powers. But this series focuses a lot more on boyfriends and girlfriends. There's more drama. There's more of those high-pitched voices, you know, from the TV shows that are so annoying. They don't have the same kind of stories that develop. You don't have the same depth in their characters. So I will just mention Winx But it's worth to have a look at what it says, because it's broadcast in over 150 countries with over 100 million audiences every month. So it's worth taking a look into. What are the key trends in these series? The first three series, I will just mention three common features on a superficial level first. The first is the main characters are all around 13 to 15 years. It's perfect for the tweens age group. They are relatable. It can be me in a few years. They can dream about being challenged, finding hidden superpowers, saving the world, and it doesn't have to be done by grown-ups. I can be the young star, just saving the world. But at the same time, I'm so young, I can relax for some time. So it's not too challenging, it's safe. The second one is that they make use of ancient myths and tales. All of them are in Trollhunters, Guillermo del Toro, he uses ancient myths from the Arthurian period, the English Arthurian tales. In this amulet and in his sword, all of these are from old tales. This means that it feels like they are rooted in history. And everything changing so fast, you can pick from something that has been forever. It's the same questions, it's the same. They have been fighting dragons or fighting evil as long as they have been humans. They are providing a kind of comfort and safety. The third, as we have seen the protagonists, they all discover that they have some kind of superpower that they didn't know of. In Dragons, Hiccup, he knows that there exists dragons, so he knows about the supernatural powers, but he's not aware of what he is capable of doing. So he's going through the same surprise stage where he finds out that he can do something special. All at the beginning of adolescence. It's always up to them to master the powers and to make the powers serve them instead of the other way around. It's often connected to their thoughts and focus. They have to work hard, so they have to find some inner strength to master these powers. And it's exciting for an 8-year-old to wonder, I might have some undiscovered powers. I might be special, I just don't know it yet. Because they are in the middle of, they know the truth fairy doesn't exist. But still, there are so many things we don't know about the world. There might be. In the outline, I have mentioned four key trends, and I'm going to go through them. Career-driven and success-oriented. It's a phrase from Barna Group's depiction of Generation Z. Children from 1999 to 2015. Generation Z describes career as more important than family. And in many shows we have seen this from Friends and onwards, that friends are more important than family. Parents are missing, not working, they are sick, they are focused on themselves, they are leaving the kids alone. This is not the fact in these shows. The parents are there, but they are allowing their kids to explore and to find out who they are. So they are supportive, but they are in the distance. And when I say that still, this is a fact for this show, these shows. It's not about how far can I get. It's not about the postmodern value of what's in it for me. It's the contrary. They suffer to save others. Not knowing about the outcome. And in some way, the protagonists are success-oriented. They excel in what they do. Even if they sometimes choose wrong, they end up winning because they always find something extra. There is something in me that can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. And there's a lot at stake. If I lose, people will die. People will suffer. And you can see that it's connected to their feeling of self-worth. Just look at Jim's attitude. Look at his eyes here. His fighting mode. He's timid. He's tiny. He's kind of afraid in the beginning. But when he gets his suit on, he finds his real identity. He finds his self-worth. I can do this. If you remember Pablo Martinez yesterday, he said that God created us with three needs: hope, work, and relationships. This first point talks to everyone's need to work, to accomplish, to matter. What does that mean for those of us talking to tweens? The second one, fighting for a better world. The protagonists could all have used their powers for their own good, for their own gain. But they are I said earlier, they are never seen asking what's in it for me. They are asking, is it worth it? Because it's costing them. They are making the world a better place for those around them, even if it's costing them dearly. And it's played out as a strong value to fight for a better world. And it's inspiring. And this is speaking directly to the I generation, Generation Z, who is socially conscious, maybe even more than the generations before. The problem is that they think that they are changing by sharing and liking in social media. Is this working for change? Just a side note, Bono Group again. The statistics say that parents want the church to be the safe space for kids, provide an environment where they don't get harmed. But if they need to grow, if they need to develop, can that happen in a safe space? Can that happen when a child is never allowed to fail or fall? Is that healthy? Is that realistic? The research shows that struggle and doubt aren't toxic to faith, but silence and lack of trying are. If we expose the kids to to trying, we can pick them up when they fail. We can support them when they fall. This second point talks to Pablo's point of need for hope. We have to give the tweens an opportunity to work for hope. The third one, find your inner hero. All of these heroes are so-called unlikely heroes. They have obstacles to overcome. They have a small physique. They have fear. They doubt themselves. They have clumsiness, or being different, being lonely. They weren't prepared. They didn't know what they were expecting. They haven't grown into this role. They stumbled into it. And it's easy to identify with them, with their fears and their fear of failing. But who knows? Maybe there are some hidden powers inside of me. Maybe I can pull that rabbit out of the hat. And if you see that these, they decide to accept the calling when it comes, but they don't do anything to find the calling. It just falls upon them. Are the tweens supposed to go around just waiting for what is going to happen to me? Is God going to just throw a calling on me? And are there an inner hero inside of me? Statistics says that 91% of Americans believe the best way to find yourself is to find yourself, to look inside yourself. If you're going to find yourself, you're going to have to look inside yourself. Is that true? Can we find the inner hero inside of ourselves? Can we be heroes by listening to ourselves? By pulling ourselves up by the hair? Or through self-realization? I think we can tell the twins that they can be heroes. We have access to supernatural powers. But we are just a tool. It's not about us. Our strength doesn't come from ourselves. It's the opposite. It's when we are weak that God can use his strength. The last one, the need for belonging. The series also plays strongly on the need for a team. The heroes doesn't survive without others serving them with their gifts, their strength, and their willingness to suffer for the greater good. How does this sound when talking to people in a postmodern world where everything is about me, where I'm not prepared to sacrifice? This is what we are told about the youth. Jim Lake is trying to save the world on his own once, but he's ending up putting all of the others and their mission in great danger. And he learns that he needs to include everybody. He's not going to make it on his own. And we know that pastors identify a lack of parent interest and lack of adult volunteers as some of the top challenges to their ministry. And we know at the same time that these are longing for belonging and for a team to back them up, to help them, to support them. This last trend reflects the need for relationships, the last of the three that was mentioned yesterday. They are not necessarily in the nuclear family or family at all. And I think that's made on purpose so that kids everywhere with all sorts of family, even if they are disappointed in their parents or in their family, it can be for me too. I can find my own family. I can find my own team. And even the characters from the TV shows can substitute for these friends. We know that the kids are growing up lonely, and they find their friends in these characters and make a team out of them. What kind of possibility are we wasting if we don't give them the opportunity for somewhere to belong? We have answered some of this question. Is it possible to find truth and morality and identity in cartoons? Are they telling something to the tweens about these important questions? truth first. More than one-third of Generation Z believes that it is not possible to know for sure if God is real. And if among those that believe that God is real, they say, but I cannot know for sure. For many teens, a bit older than tweens, truth seems relative at best and at worst altogether unknowable. How about in this series? Truth isn't necessarily relative. It seems to be found in tradition, in listening to the wise old ones, but only until the point where the young protagonist says, no, you are wrong. I know better. I will try it my way. Tradition is not flawless. And one more thing, it's okay to lie if it serves a greater good. It's okay to be relative around truth if it serves a greater good. Identity. In a postmodern society, we might think of, like Dickey says, that identity is about gathering all the images of yourself to create an image that you can hold together. But in these areas, image and identity are something you are given. They stumble across this calling, they take it upon themselves to fulfill this job, and suddenly they are the troll hunter or the dragon friend and the witch. And with everything that implies for their lives, it gives them a purpose and a direction. And again, we see a shift when it comes to teen shows, where it is displayed totally different. You can be whatever you want. There is no direction, there is no truth, you can choose. How is it that these tweens shows differs so much from what we see the older youth are watching? A small point about morality. These shows doesn't say that you have to be good. They say, I want to be good because it's presented so attractive. It's sold as attractive to be nice to other persons, to sacrifice, to suffer, to be a good person. It's inspiring. And these shows, they give us an opportunity to tell stories in a different way than if it had been soap operas. Because they play on the features of the fairy tales. We know that G.K. Chesterton has said a lot about fairy tales, and C.S. Lewis, and Tolkien says that in his essay on fairy stories, he says that these are perfect to tell us about recovery. By placing the familiar or over-familiar in an unfamiliar setting, we see it, as it were, for the first time. We see it afresh. As we are or were meant to see them, as things apart from ourselves. This is why these series gives us so many opportunities to talk to tweens. C.S. Lewis says that sometimes fairy stories may say best what's to be said. What does this mean for the gospel, for talking to tweens about who Christ is and what this means for their life? First, there is this point of the integration of faith and occupation. I said that achievement is big for Generation Z, both to their sense for self and for their ultimate goals. Most teens expect to land their dream job by age 25, and one in four believes they will be famous within the next 10 years. And Barna Institute believes this emphasis on career presents an opportunity for the church to engage in what would be called vocational discipleship. Teaching young people about the integration of faith and occupation, helping them to better understand the concept of calling and the theological significance of work, and giving us an opportunity to putting them to work, giving them challenges. Tweens want to see grown-ups integrate their faith in everyday life, not just on Sunday mornings. Two, focusing on vocational discipleship is vital for the transition from kids to adolescents, according to Barna. Three, tweens want to contribute. They want to matter. It's among their basic needs. It's vital to their faith and to their mental health. The second one. In these series, the problem of evil is very real, not just in the underworld, but they are facing bullying, loneliness, the evil all around them. And teens, along with young adults, are more likely than older Americans to say that the problem of evil and suffering is a deal breaker for them. And in these years, they suffer real losses. They cry, and I cry with them. And it's stated that the evil exists, but it's never mentioned where it comes from and the ultimate solution. I can do anything through him who gives me strength. In these series, there are clear moral values. They do not act on their feelings, they act on duty. What's a greater good? We can teach the kids that they can, they have some guidelines, just like these kids, these protagonists have. They have guidelines, they have a direction, they have a calling, but it's not up to their own inner strength. It's not down to their focus. 10 to 12 year olds, do you know what they fear the most? They fear failure. We can help them lift their focus from themselves to their creator. The last one. The main characters gain their independence through the seasons. Tweens are in this transition period where the world opens up, but they still need stability and a home base. And these series, they praise being different, standing out. It might not be easy, it might cost you. They feel lonely, they feel odd, they feel burdened. It's not glossed over, it's not portrayed easy. Does that sound familiar to us? We have been given a calling. We're not told that it's going to be easy. And one of Barna's five key components to instilling in teens a faith that keeps them connected to God and his church is a meaningful mentoring relationship with at least one Christian adult who is not their parent. We have great possibilities. Summing it up, we have seen that these three stories is not portraying all of the postmodern characteristics What does that tell us about twins and the gospel? One, they deserve truth. Two, they deserve that we engage. Three, they are open for the spiritual. And four, they need to be challenged. In these stories, they are taught that they can take on dragons and befriend them, or that the young girl easily defeats the wolf. This does not reflect the reality we live in. It doesn't always end well. But the fairy tale world shares the darkness of our world. Yet its world powerfully pictures a place where marvelous and unbelievable things truly happen. Where good battles evil and survives to tell the tale. And this is the fairy tale gospel, a gospel that introduces us to the true gospel, that our once upon a time can indeed become a happily ever after. I think that these series, I haven't given you scenes or dialogues. I have given you some oversight, what they are about, and why we should engage in these series. If you watch the first episodes in each series, you would have a lot to work on talking to twins. I have a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and it's been so fruitful talking to them. Are you watching Troll Hunters? I've seen it all already. Okay, I didn't notice. One last thing. In all of this, we need to be connected to the Word. We need to connect the tweens to the Word. It's not about being most relevant or being cool, the coolest mom. I've seen it all. I know what your world is like. Now I have all the answers. It's about how can I learn, teach them the word of the gospel. And I think in these areas there are lots of opportunities. Thank you so much.